Like, that's great.
Yeah.
I should ask her what happened to the money because I'm taking her to Japan early May.
Yeah.
So you need to spend your own money.
Right.
Hey, I am recording, so whenever you're ready, Steve.
Okay. Again, we're not live.
Okay.
If you could introduce yourself and with the organization name.
Yeah, my name is Ali Soltani. I am from Iranian American Community of Wisconsin. We have different chapters in different cities. I think about 40 some states we have chapters. We're in Wisconsin, so
okay.
I'm the spokesperson for the Iranian American community.
How many Iranian Americans are in Wisconsin?
I think there are about 20,000 or so, but they're scattered. There are many students in UWM, but then there are a lot of people who work here and been here for years. They're in Waukesha, Milwaukee, and some are even Green Bay and some others, other cities in Wisconsin.
Okay. When and why did you leave Iran?
I left in 1978, right before the revolution happens. I was going to school into a university in Iran, and that was right before the revolution. So we had a lot of demonstrations. I spent 2 years in university in Iran. I only passed like 26 credits because the classes would cancel or, you know, because of riots and stuff. So that's what I left to continue my education here in the U.S.
How would you describe life when you lived in Iran and before the war?
You might not believe, but we were at least, we were watching the same shows, TV shows that you were watching here. Shah was kind of trying to, you know, it was put there by United States and stuff. So it tried to make the country like United States in a sense. So we were watching the same shows. Life, much better than it's now economically. Mm-hmm. But during the Shah, there were no political freedoms. There were a lot of people who were imprisoned and tortured for political beliefs. He canceled all opposition parties, and he made one. And he told people, if you don't like it, either leave or you go to jail. So economically, it was much better than now, but obviously it wasn't the best either. But as far as political freedoms, there were no political freedoms in Iran.
Tensions had been building for months between the United States and Iran. What was your reaction when the military strikes began from America and Israel?
As a spokesperson for the Iranian American community, we also support the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which is an organization we have been saying for many years that appeasement policy will lead to war. Mm. We always have been emphasizing no appeasement, no war, help the Iranian people and their opposition to defeat this regime. The result, the war was basically the result of his appeasement. You know, in 2002, the Iranian opposition revealed the nuclear sites of the Iranian regime. That was 24 years ago. Mm-hmm. Nothing was done. Consequently, they actually revealed the missile program and all that stuff. But all these years, both Europe and United States appeased the mullahs, helped them to a point that they made a beast out of these guys. They started interfering, meddling in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, all their proxy forces. And it made war inevitable, in a sense. Some people, some Iranians, welcomed the war because they were fed up. And you heard a couple of months ago that they killed a lot of people in the streets during the demonstrations. They shot and killed, some estimates go 30, 40,000 people they killed, and more than 50,000 they arrested, summary executions. It's a very brutal regime. So some people, because they were fed up, they said, oh, United States, come and attack, that kind of mentality. But foreign interference will never end up well in the long run. So as Iranians that believe that we, the people of Iran, should be able to do something and bring about a republic, a free democratic republic, We believe that foreign interference should not be there. But nobody asked us whether this war should be there, the people of Iran. It happens. We now want the whoever is involved, U.S., Israel, and whoever, not to attack, try to minimize the civilian casualties, and also not to attack the civilian infrastructure, because we don't want, after this regime falls, we need to get up and go. And if we don't have any refineries, if we don't have any power stations running, it would be very hard for the Iranian people to actually get back up and, you know, join the international community. So we have always opposed foreign war. But as we said, because of the result of the appeasement policy, it has made it inevitable for the international community to deal with the Iranian regime.
Can we pause just one second?
Yep.
Okay.
Is that your phone that?
Yeah, someone's phone.
Yes, I'm going to silence that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Can we
sure.
Okay.
Hearing a letter.
There's just a moment when it touched the top of the collar.
You can stick it on my.
Dangle it.
This yeah. Good.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay. What are the discussions you're having with other Iranian Americans about the war?
Well, just this Saturday, a bunch of us, we rented a 15-passenger van, a bunch of us drove to Washington, D.C. in front of the Capitol. We had a demonstration. And obviously, 14-hour drive, we're talking about everything. Again, we want to make sure that the international community and the United States doesn't choose a leader for us. We should let everybody was in agreement that we want the Iranian people to select their own form of government. We want a non-nuclear, secular republic based on rule of law. And there had been talk of this son of the Shah, you know, coming. Absolutely not. I mean, the Iranian people, after 120 years since we have the Constitutional Revolution. And since then, we have had two monarchists, and now the third clergyman. So we are not going back to monarchy again. There are some people and some entities that want to bring him back. But he doesn't have any organic support. Everything is manufactured, it's made for TV and created. So we don't want that. We want actually the Iranian opposition, National Council of Resistance of Iran, which the leader is a woman called Maryam Rajavi. She has a 10-point plan. February 28 of this year, she announced the formation of a provisional government that will take over after the fall of this regime. That provisional government's task is to have a constituent assembly, which will write a, you know, which will actually, based on the free and fair election, will have that, and then will write a constitution, a new constitution for a republic. Her 10-point plan is about freedom of press, gender equality, non-nuclear Iran, and you know, market economy, and basically in separation of church and state or religion and state. It's a very democratic. We have the majority of U.S. Senate and Congress support us. Mm-hmm. More than 4,000 parliamentarians from around the world support this plan. So all of a sudden coming, you know, creating this so-called crown prince and putting it there, it infuriates a lot of us. That where the heck did this come from? This guy was sitting in exile for 45 years, had nothing to do with anything. Mm-hmm. He has repeatedly said that he doesn't want to go back to Iran. He's not this. All of a sudden, he's pumped and propped up by some entities trying to make a leader out of him. And that kind of gets a lot of people upset that that we have had an opposition that has fought for 47 years continuously, not just showing up at the last moment and trying to steal, in a sense, the revolution. That's what our concern is right now. Mm-hmm. That's what mm-hmm. we're worried about, that we don't want that. We want the international community to recognize the right of our people to select our own form of government and our own system of government and parliaments and all that. So,
okay. Moving to family now. Have you been in contact with friends and family that you have in Iran?
Yes. Internet is cut off, mm-hmm. right? So my sister just yesterday, through landline, had called me. I walked out of my office and it was a voicemail. And I, and then my nieces are one in California, one in Michigan, my brother's in Florida. So they all have talked to them in some way. They all have moved to smaller cities, so they're not in Tehran anymore because most of the bombardment's been in Tehran. So they've moved in smaller cities in Iran. So they're
for their safety.
They're safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the internet's been cut off. They can call out, I've heard, right?
The call from with landline, not through internet, because before we were using WhatsApp, you know, yeah. Telegram, or Instagram, you know, for mm-hmm. Being in contact. But they've used landlines to call.
Okay. What are you hearing about how bad the war is there?
Well, we have the satellite. We watch the satellite. I talked to my niece that had talked to her mom. They, even in the small cities, a couple places where these are the garrisons and the security forces, places that have been hit. She knew about those. But Tehran is really, a lot of people hear a lot of loud noises, the bombing, and scare some people, of course. But most of the bombing has been in Tehran and big cities, not the small villages or small towns.
Mm-hmm. Do you fear continued military action, and do you fear troops in Iran?
That's a good question. You see, this regime cannot be overthrown by airstrikes, okay? You need people on the ground to fight these Basijis and militias and the IRGC and all the members of the suppressive forces. So U.S., either what happens is that either U.S. or Israel have to put boots on the ground, which is for a country like Iran, 90 million is a large country. It's very hard. Or we should rely on the people of Iran. We have an organized armed resistance inside Iran. Actually, a couple weeks ago, right before a few days, three, 4 days before the U.S. attacked the compound of Khamenei and killed the supreme leader, this armed opposition, 250 members of the armed opposition of the MEK, Mujahideen Khalq, they attacked that compound. Mm. 150 of them, 100 of them unfortunately died and got or arrested. Their names have been given to United Nations Human Rights Organization. And then 150 of them turned back to their bases. What I'm saying is that there is an organized resistance armed in Iran. We should help them rather than try to bring U.S. or Israeli, you know, troops on the ground. It would be very hard. It would be much easier for the Iranian people to do it that way because they know everything. They know who these people are. They know where they live. They know, mm-hmm. you know, and they can fight them. So that would be the best solution for us.
Okay. When the military strike is over and has ended, what are your hopes for the country?
Well, hopefully this regime will fall. If they manage to stay in power, mm-hmm. Again, our fight is not over, right? We're hoping that, again, the organized opposition of Iran will be able to overthrow this regime and bring a democratic, secular, non-nuclear Iran republic for Iran. If that doesn't happen shortly, I mean, we'll continue. But again, the aerial bombardment is not going to do it. I'm hoping that U.S. doesn't put boots on the ground, because if that happens, it's going to be a lot of, it's not going to be, it's going to be messy, mm-hmm. I should say. It's not going to be that clean, regardless of what they do. Again, they have some estimates of 1 million Basiji forces. Basiji are the militia, mm-hmm. plainclothes people that they killed a lot of people a couple months ago in the streets. So it would be hard for a small number of troops to go there and do what they need to do to overthrow the regime.
What are your thoughts about the anti-war protests here in the United States and those who feel that America shouldn't be waging this war at all?
Well, as I said, this regime, the war is basically the fault of this regime. Mm-hmm. It threatens Israel, and you saw that they actually attacked all the neighboring countries that were supposedly friends with Iran. Mm-hmm. They were actually trying to facilitate the talks. Oman, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, you know, these people have been the ones that have been appeasing the mullahs and helped the mullahs every way you can imagine. Yet they attacked them with missiles. So this is a regime that has brought this on to itself by, they have been saying from the very beginning, death to America, death to Israel. And then they also say death to Munafiqin, which is their name they give to the our opposition movement, the Mujahideen. So this has been brought up by the regime. I understand that people are against the war, but imagine if this regime would have had the nuclear weapon. Mm. Imagine one of those missiles would have been a nuclear weapon, you know, armed with nuclear weapon. What would have happened? So the appeasement policy, unfortunately, not stopping this regime earlier, has brought this up to the on to the international community. There was, I wouldn't think there was any other choice except, again, for them, because our opposition a few years ago, or many in 90 or something around that time, U.S. Disarmed all our opposition movement in Iraq. We were in Iraq. And took all their weapons and armored vehicles and all that. So it was a way for Iranian people to go and overthrow these people, but they disarmed them. So that's why the opposition actually started having the rebel units inside Iran organize that and have that. A war, to me, was inevitable, mm-hmm. because this regime brought it on to itself. The alternative would have been to let this regime get nuclear weapons, or would have been to help the Iranian opposition, which it seems like some people with the appeasement policy didn't want to do that. So, no, war is not good, we understand, but sometimes it's inevitable. Again, we don't support the foreign wars, but being put yourself in the shoes of United States and Israel, this regime does not hesitate to kill its own people by the thousands. Imagine what happens to Israel, which they see, you know, as their enemy. So I think it's the Iranian regime and also the appeasement policy that has brought this war.
The Trump administration has said that their reason for this war is to stop the development of Iran from having nuclear weapons. What do you think of that as justification for the military strikes?
I think that is a fair assessment in a sense. I mean, short of having conspiracy theories about, you know, expansion of United States or Israel or this stuff, short term, I think that is a very legitimate reasoning, in a sense that if our opposition had not revealed in 2002 Natanz and Iraq, the sites of nuclear, you know, facilities, they would have had nuclear weapons by now. So, and they have always, regardless, even in JCPOA when they had the agreements with during the Obama administrations, they were cheating. They were actually, apparently, they were doing all this stuff because they see nuclear weapons as their guarantee for their survival. They see that as if I, like North Korea, if he had a nuclear weapon, nobody could have attacked us. That kind of mentality. So And once they do it, they have proxy forces, Hamas, Hezbollah, you know, Houthis in Yemen, Hashd al-Shaabi and other, you know, proxy forces in Iraq. And even in Venezuela, the IRGC had, you know, a lot of posts there and a lot of places that they were there. So it is true. I mean, they have even states that nuclear weapon and also their missile, you know, capabilities. Because if they would have had long-range intercontinental missiles to the United States, they would have used it. Because they have bombarded every, they have attacked every U.S. consulate or military bases in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. What would have stopped them? They actually did one in Cyprus. And they yesterday I heard that Turkey actually downed another one of their missiles. So they don't hesitate to attack any country that they see hostile to them.
Okay. I've seen some discussion that the Iranian regime is threatening Iranians outside of the United States. Are you concerned about this?
As I was talking to you earlier, I have been myself the victim of that.
Right. Tell me about that. What happened in those situations?
For that special incident you're talking
about?
I saw, that was 1993, I believe. I saw that they had, somebody had scratched my car and wrote some graffiti on my car the first day. And then 2 days, 3 days later, I was out with a friend. And it was his birthday, so we went to a bar. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, somebody came and told the bartender, the security in the bar, that I have stolen the wallet. Now, we just got in that bar, nothing. This guy, big black dude. And I was like telling the guy, no, I didn't. All of a sudden, he punched my face right then. Bloody, obviously, the bars don't want to have anything reported from their bar, so they kicked us out.
Sure.
I went across the street, Pizza Man in North Avenue, and they wouldn't let me call the police either. They'd get out. Once I got out, two people from the car parked on the side of the street, he came with the brass knuckles, started hitting me in the street. So they left. I mean, broke my nose. I went to the hospital right by that North, I don't know, St. Mary's or whatever it is. I went there, and that was it. The police came and said, who was it? I said, I have no idea. These two big black guys, you know, they were hired gun, obviously. And then I got a call, and next time you won't be that lucky. I said, okay, that's fine. You can do whatever you want, but I'm not going to stop. So, yeah, I mean, they have killed a lot of people in Europe. They don't hesitate. That's why you can't find a lot of people interview you.
Right.
Because there's always a danger. They, I just heard that they said that they will confiscate the properties of anybody outside Iran who has been in these demonstrations.
Right.
Inside Iran, you know, their property, whatever they have. So, yeah, there's always a danger there. But there are people that are being killed. So this is nothing compared to that.
Are you concerned about how attitudes towards Iranians may change if the war continues and American soldiers are hurt or killed?
During 1979, as I told you, I was in Madison. It was a hostage crisis.
Yeah.
I personally, that was even worse because there are a lot of people that supported that regime at the time. It just had come. People thought Khomeini was, you know, this godly man that is holy and this and that, and they were fooled by this charisma he had. Even then, I personally did not have any issue with anybody because people, bottom line, person to person, they're the same. You can always find zealots that are, you know, extreme and do stuff. But fortunately now, a lot of people know that the Iranian people are themselves against this regime. 80-90% of the people oppose this regime. They don't. That's why some of them, as I said, they're happy that U.S. even attacked. So as long as people realize that there's a distinction between the Iranian regime and the Iranian people, I don't think you'll see much of that. And I think a lot of people do realize that.
Okay. We've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything that I didn't ask that's important?
No. It's just I wanted to, again, once more, I wanted to emphasize that we want the U.S., the international community, to let the Iranians, after 120 years of fighting for freedom, we don't want to go back to another dictatorship. Doesn't matter how you sugarcoat it, it's a dictatorship. We don't want to go to one-man rule. We want no clergy. We don't want no clergy. We don't want no Shah. We want a non-nuclear, secular, democratic republic based on rule of law that if you don't like somebody, you can vote them out. Right, just like U.S., just like France, just like many democratic countries. And this is what we want. We want U.S. and every other country to recognize our right to choose our own form of government. That is what's dear to us, and that's what actually in the long run is for the benefit of Iran and the international community. Imagine what would have happened in 1979 if we really would have had a democratic country. None of this would have happened in the Middle East. You know, Iran would have been part of the international community. It's a very rich country with a, you know, long heritage. We have relatively smart people. So it would have been a good country to have in the Middle East, like any, you know, many countries, progressive countries in the Middle East. So.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Do we need to do room tone, do you think?
No, it's okay.
No? Okay. Thank you so much.